suddenly nothing happened. But in my dreams, I slew the dragon and down this beaten path, up this cobbled lane, walking in my old footsteps once again. And you say, just be here now, forget about the past. Is wearing thin. Just let me throw one more dice. I know that I can win. I'm waiting for my real life to begin. So very soon, it's just the times I leave, and you say, be still, my love. Open up your heart, let the light shine in. Don't you understand? Oh, I already have a plan. I'm waiting for my real life to.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-9636. Punch those numbers into your phone. Give us a call. We love to hear from our listeners.
We do indeed.
Later tonight, we're going to be talking about sexual harassment again. as it hits incredibly close to home for both Shea and I. In a number of ways, and sort of opens up new dimensions on this conversation that go beyond Harvey Weinstein and his piggery.
Well, I was talking to my brother about it the other day, and it's funny speaking to somebody who has, like, my brother is a very smart man, but he also, you know, he's not in the entertainment industry. Like, it's interesting to speak to someone who has a completely objective perspective of it. but yes, this one definitely does hit rather close to home.
Yeah. General note, guys, stop taking those things out.
Yeah.
And that's, women don't want to see them. Even when they want to see them, they don't want to see them.
Yeah. Have you seen how ugly they are?
Yeah, they're
no
not.
No offense, but I mean, like, ours are way prettier than yours.
It's not an attractive part of your anatomy. It has no business being out in public or at a Forever 21 or wherever you may choose to display it.
To set it free.
Yeah. Somebody was displaying one at the Forever 21 at the North Shore Mall over the weekend. To some teenage girls. And if that happened at Square One, I'd be like, yeah, Square One Mall. That doesn't really shock me at all. North Shore, that's the nice mall.
I wouldn't say that's the rich people mall.
That's a nice mall up on the North Shore. You know, that's the mall that has all of the high-end stores and actual business. Even if it happened at Liberty Tree up the street, I'd be like, yeah, Liberty Tree Mall. That doesn't surprise me. But North Shore, come on, guy. No, where and when to take that thing out. And when is never.
Yeah.
And where
unless requested and in private.
Yeah. And where is when your doctor asks you and under no other circumstances. But we'll get into that later tonight. In the meantime, I think there are other things going on in the world that may require our attention.
There are indeed. This story blew my mind. A little girl and her mother were hospitalized this morning after being struck by a car while waiting for the school bus outside of their home in Brockton, Massachusetts. The crash happened on Colonel Bell Drive, where witnesses say a woman appeared to be trying to reverse when her car suddenly shot forward. A six-year-old girl and her mother, who were waiting outside for the school bus, were struck and pinned underneath the car. Both were conscious and alert, but badly injured when first responders arrived to take them to the hospital. I will say, I'm not trying to defend who did this. It has absolutely happened to me that I thought my car was in reverse and it was in drive or vice versa.
Well, you say...
But I usually notice within like a millisecond.
You say this as an avowed and noted bad driver.
Excuse me, I'm a fantastic driver.
No,
that
you're
happens
not.
To get into accidents you, sometimes.
You are not. No, you are not. And I can go through the archives of this program and probably give a state police officer probable cause to revoke your license permanently.
I beg your pardon. I was found not at fault for every accident except the most previous one. Which that was definitely my fault.
But
even so, it wasn't even my fault. The woman stopped super short in front of me.
Yeah.
I'm an aggressive driver. That doesn't make me a bad driver.
You're an aggressive driver with a cell phone in one hand.
I beg your pardon. It's on my lap.
Yeah, stop texting while you drive.
I don't. I watch Netflix while I drive.
We need a fence around the bus stop, don't we? Or we need stanchions, or we need something.
Well, what's weird is that I found that just in my own fantastic driving experience. What I found is that, like, it used to be so when that little stop sign comes out, or even when you see a school bus, you automatically slow down.
Yeah.
Nowadays, people seem to not care.
Everybody just ricochets around
the
bus.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, this is so annoying. There's no one on this side of the street. I can just pass them. Like,
yeah.
It's gotten to the point where everybody forgets that that's actually the law.
Yeah.
You know.
And God help you if you're a pedestrian in the crosswalk, because everybody's just, you know, trying to drive around you and annoyed that you're there.
Well, I remember, though, that's something, listeners, quick tip. If you get hit by a car in a crosswalk, you can sue. If you're not in the crosswalk, you can't. I know we love to jaywalk in Boston, but just a little Little nugget of knowledge for you.
It's a bigger issue out in the suburbs where the crosswalks aren't quite as common as they are in the city.
That's true.
You know, when you're going to walk like down the street, the crosswalk, and it's like, no, I just want to go to that store.
Yeah, it's like there's one a mile in each direction, but where I want to go is directly in front of me.
Yeah, everybody's running back and forth across the street. We expect that. I try and use the crosswalk when I can. But the thing about it is, you get a few of these stories every single year where, like, some kid gets hit at a bus stop or a kid and a parent gets hit at a bus stop. And the bus stop, in this case, is the end of somebody's driveway. You know, it's not like the bus shelters that we have downtown, which, really, if somebody slams a car into that, they offer no protection whatsoever. But at least call attention to themselves so that drivers may be more likely to slow down or stop or what have you.
Or not run over a mother and child.
And I've always wondered why we don't have, you know, in every neighborhood, like a designated school bus stop area. Why we don't do that.
Well, especially given that we have actual bus stop areas.
Yeah.
it really stands to reason that this could have been avoided, even if it's temporary, even if it's something that, you know, everyone, it would create a job. Everyone needs a job. Sorry, but even if it was somebody who just set them up every morning, like little traffic cones or something,
and then
took them away.
I think it should be something.
And then set them up again in the afternoon.
I think it should be something more permanent, where you have signs up, school bus stop ahead, and
that makes sense. It's just like slow children at play.
Yeah, and like you can figure out in any of these towns around here, like how frequent they need to be, and I mean, Wakefield, the bus stops at people's individual houses, actually, so it's not going to work there. But in some of these other communities where it's like you've got this sort of neighborhood school bus stop, why isn't that a designated area? Why don't we have signage? Why don't we have a bench? Why don't we have, you know, a little spot, yellow curb and paint on the street, all these other things that we love to do to let drivers know this is a school bus stop. There are children here. Please stop being stupid for 30 seconds as you pass through. 30 seconds. It's all we're asking.
That's a bit of a request, Eric.
It's a lot of time, I know.
It is. And I like being stupid all of the time. In national news, police revealed today that the gunman blamed for the deadly rampage in Northern California began his killing spree by fatally shooting his wife and stashing her body beneath the floorboards of their home. Word of the grim discovery came a day after Kevin Jansen Neal gunned down four other people and attacked an elementary school before he was killed by police. Neal, 44, had been out on bail after being charged with stabbing a neighbor when he went on a 45-minute shooting spree in the rural community of Rancho Tehama Reserve, about 130 miles north of Sacramento, yesterday. All the dead were adults, but among the 10 injured were 7 children, including 4 at the school that Neal targeted, and a 2-year-old boy who was wounded elsewhere. One child at the school was hit by gunfire and remains in critical condition.
There was a rather chilling detail about this that came out. Apparently, when the school heard the gunfire, they went on lockdown, and they went on lockdown 8 seconds before the guy showed up in front of the school, and he tried to get into the school.
Yeah.
And when he failed to get into the school, he just started spraying bullets at the side of the school, which is how one of these, the child who is still in intensive care, that's how that child was shot. He was shot through the wall of the building.
Yeah.
I think we can all imagine what would have happened had this individual gotten into the school.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we're talking about a tragedy here, we would be talking about a tragedy several degrees
monumental
bigger. Yeah. This guy gets into a school with a gun or with a bunch of guns. I guess he had a few guns on him.
All were unregistered, by the way.
Which he was not supposed to own. He was not supposed to have them. He had a restraining order out against him. He was not supposed to have any guns. But if he got into that school, we'd be talking about another Newtown. And good work by the school administration in taking action as quickly as they did. Good work by the school administrators and the education board for having those plans and processes in place.
In place, yeah.
Yeah, so you do see some progress here that we've learned a little bit.
A little bit being the operative phrase.
But here's the thing. This guy is not supposed to have any guns because he has a restraining order.
See, I had read that he'd been cleared for gun ownership, but it didn't matter because they were both illegally obtained, so they weren't registered. And the adjustments that he made to them, I'm kind of proud that I don't know gun speak, but the various adjustments that he made to them were also done illegally. It was tampering with the construction of a firearm.
But here's the thing. For several days before he went on his little rampage, he was in his backyard firing off round after round after round after round.
And which his neighbors reported him for.
You're going to tell me that that was reported and the police showed up. I don't know if they did or not, but the police showed up and said, oh yeah, everything's okay here. Somebody dropped the ball on this one.
I'm going to say that's, well, and especially it's difficult in, this is, I don't want to call it rural, but I mean, it's rural. It's when the word reserve is in the name of your town, it's pretty out there. And, I feel like a lot of times, unfortunately, the law enforcement is just used to, like, you know, busting up kids drinking by the swimming hole and things like that. They're not equipped for this sort of thing.
But at the same time, in a small town like that, the cops know who everybody is.
Which means they knew he was crazy.
Yeah. You know who everybody is. You should have some understanding, if you're law enforcement, of who has restraining orders and who doesn't in your community, because you have to enforce them. And you should know that if an individual has a restraining order, he's not allowed to have weapons. And the cops should be looking at these guns and saying, have any modifications been made? Instead of rolling up and saying, oh, that's Crazy Dave. And then
he's just being crazy shooting at cans.
Put your guns away, Crazy Dave. And then Crazy Dave puts his guns away and then kills a bunch of people a couple of days later.
Well, that's for a timeline of those of you who haven't followed this story. His wife was apparently his first victim. And then he killed a neighbor and stole his pickup truck. And then basically weaved through their subdivision, firing at other motorists, killing three more people. And two of the people he wounded were a mother and child. Along the way, he crashed the vehicle, stole another car, and then headed for the school. He drove through the gate and sprayed the school with bullets for 6 minutes straight. And once he realized he wouldn't be able to get inside, he left the school grounds, which, as you said, Derek, is kudos to the school administration.
Yeah.
And it ended with police ramming his car and killing him in a gun battle. And it is... It is worth mentioning that I agree with you, which is that the children who were injured, one of them was shot, but the most of them, it was just shattered glass, and their injuries are rather minor. And as you said, I mean, so this is not turning a blind eye to the fact that people lost their lives and there are people who are really badly injured, but this could have been Newtown all over again.
Oh, easily.
This could have been catastrophic, and not saying it wasn't tragic and terrible, but it is proof positive that we're stepping in the right direction.
I think it's a step in the right direction, but at the same time, I want to know,
not far enough.
Because here we go again with everybody saying we got to get rid of guns. There are laws on the books to prevent this individual from owning a gun. Why does he have one? Why is he in his backyard shooting and the police are going to his house and he still has guns? With illegal modifications.
And that's, well, they were illegally obtained, too. That's what really gets me, is that if every report I've read has said that the neighbors, one of whom he ended up killing, but the neighbors have reported several times hearing shots coming from the house.
Yeah.
And if you're doing a house call as a police officer, checking on sounds of shots fired, first thing you do should be asking for the registration for those guns.
Yeah.
That should be the first thing you do.
He's in an ongoing beef with these neighbors,
I'm sorry,
too.
The first thing you should do is make sure he's not pointing a gun at you.
Yeah.
Then ask for the registration of the guns.
Yeah.
But yeah, an ongoing... Well, that's what's crazy. I mean, everyone has beef with their neighbors at one point or another.
But that's also the origin of the restraining order, is the beef with the neighbors. So that may play into the police thinking in all of this that, oh, it's the neighbors trying to get them riled up again. But at the same time, you have an obligation to enforce the law. And before we run out and say, let's pass new legislation that does all of these things, let's remember that you can pass all the legislation you want. You can make guns illegal in this country if you want. If nobody enforces the law, it's a meaningless gesture. And what we need is enforcement. And it may be well past time for every local police force, every state police force in the country to get a refresher on the gun laws and what they are expected to do. Related note, we found out the Army reported today that 20% of their convictions that would have made people ineligible to own a gun were not reported to the FBI. They're the first branch of the military to get back. 20% did not get reported.
Well, and that's the, I think, the biggest, at least from my point of view, the biggest issue with gun control is everyone, Republicans and NRA people and blah, 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 all say, oh, you want to legalize guns? No one's saying that, but make it so that people like this cannot have access to a firearm.
Yeah.
And I understand this is a perfect example of you can buy them illegally, but it was on the cops to check it out,
yeah,
to search the house. That's probable cause for a warrant of the house is the neighbor saying they can hear gunshots going off.
If you know that guy's not supposed to have a gun, and which they may or may not have, there's a whole angle of investigation with that. But if you know that guy's not supposed to have a gun and people are calling up reporting gunshots and he shows up and you go to the house and he's like, oh, I don't have a gun, that's when you get out Mr. Search Warrant,
mm-hmm,
and start looking for the gun. Because clearly the guy has a gun.
Yeah.
There isn't anybody running through the desert out there shooting stuff and then running away.
Yeah, especially given the remoteness of this community, where it's not like, it'd be one thing if someone was like, someone's in the Bronx and was like, I heard gunshots, I think it's my neighbor.
Yeah, then, which one?
Yeah, then it's like, which of the 60 neighbors that you have do you think it is? But here, this is it's a sub-development. It's tiny.
Yeah.
It's barely a town. And especially, as you said, in places like this, the sheriffs know the crazies.
They know who everybody is.
It's just despicable, and it's something that could have been very easily avoided.
In world news, Zimbabwe stands on the brink of civil war after the country's military seized power on Wednesday, blocking roads to the capital and taking control of a state broadcaster. President Robert Mugabe, who has led the country for 37 years following a victory over colonialists in 1980, told the president of neighboring South Africa that he is fine during a phone call from his residence, where he is essentially under arrest along with his wife Grace and senior aides. Military forces made the moves to oppose the elevation of Grace Mugabe to the position of president, a move that President Mugabe supports. Last week, Mugabe fired Vice President Emerson Mnangagwa as part of a plan to elevate his wife, who enjoys strong support in the youth brigade of the country's ruling ZANU-PF party, but is opposed by military veterans of Zimbabwe's war for independence. So we got two sides here. This has been going on for a few days. This has actually been going on for a week. Hasn't really got a lot of ink because there isn't any shooting going on yet. On the one hand, we have Robert Mugabe, who has run the country into the ground. The economy is in free fall. Mm. The current report is that inflation is 50% a month. And part of the reason the country is in free fall is because the state took over all of the private enterprise and kicked out everybody that was actually helping Zimbabwe make money. So the country's in free fall. He's trying to get his 52-year-old wife installed as his successor. He's 93 years old. And the military isn't having any of it. Because the military, the veterans of the military who fought alongside Mugabe in the independence war are basically saying, no. This wasn't about installing the Mugabe family as rulers for life.
Mm-hmm.
When you're gone, we're going to have
a vote.
We're
moving on.
Yeah. So last week, he fires the vice president. On Tuesday, one of the military generals rolled four tanks into the Capitol and then turned them around and rolled them out. And that was sort of the first sign that maybe something is going to go on here. And then today, they rolled the tanks right in and seized the Capitol. There hasn't been any shooting. life is going on as normal in Zimbabwe right now. And what I've been able to hear about what's being said on the ground is that most people don't care.
Yeah, that's basically the early today, an army spokesman made a statement saying that a military takeover was not underway and that life was continuing as usual. But that being said, the military is in control of the state TV now. There is a huge presence at the international airport, and Mugabe has not been seen in public since all of this came through.
Robert Mugabe is not running anything right now. Robert Mugabe is not...
Maybe the only thing he's running is thoughts through his head of what he could have done differently so this wouldn't be happening.
He's in his home soiling his pants while the military sits outside and figures out what they're going to do next. So everybody is calling for calm. They haven't quite labeled this a coup yet. No one's calling it a coup yet because...
Yet being the operative word.
Nobody has basically stepped up and said, I'm in charge now. And what happens next will determine what goes on there. Strategically, this is a big deal because South Africa is one of our allies and one of the prominent industrial nations in Africa. And Zimbabwe is right over the border to the northeast. There is some concern about illness, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, possibly getting into that part of the world. Instability there is not going to be appreciated by anybody. So, something to keep an eye on. If you see the word Zimbabwe in a headline or you hear the word Zimbabwe in the news, you might want to pay attention to that.
Love that. The word Zimbabwe.
Yes. Sports news. Red Sox great Bobby Doerr, a member of the Hall of Fame, considered by some to be the greatest Sox second baseman of all time, passed away on Monday at the age of 99. Doerr was part of the 1946 World Series team and a storied group of four friends that included Ted Williams, Johnny Pesky, and Dom DiMaggio. His lifetime stats included 2,042 hits, 223 home runs, and 1,247 runs batted in, including six seasons with at least 100 RBIs, a record that stood for 25 years. Doerr's number one was retired by the Red Sox in 1988, and the team presented him with a World Series ring following their 2004 victory.
Not to editorialize or come off as too much of, as a girl, but oh my God, he was attractive.
Oh yeah, yeah. All four of those guys were good looking.
I'm going to say all of them were good looking.
Johnny Pesky was on the short side. I met Johnny Pesky.
Man, was I born in the wrong generation.
Yeah.
But now I'm looking at pictures of the various the various plays he made. It's pretty unbelievable. Some of the things that his body would do. And this one, he's off the ground.
He wasn't
making a double play.
During his career, he wasn't one of those guys that had such superlative numbers that you look at him and say, automatic Hall of Fame.
I would say that's the thing is that I hadn't, you know how much I love baseball and the Red Sox. I didn't even know who he was. I know every other name you mentioned as being part of the Big Four. I didn't know who he was.
But there are players that have such a tremendous impact because defensively, he was the best in baseball. Nothing got by Bobby Doerr. And the type of defense that he played as a second baseman is something that we take for granted today. You see these guys out there making these ridiculous catches and, you know, flinging the ball around and making double plays and all the rest of that. When Bobby Doerr played the game, somebody who could do that was a rare talent.
Yeah.
A very rare talent.
Like I said, I just showed Derek a picture that I'm looking at right now. It's him making a double play. He's literally like maybe 9 inches off the ground.
Yeah.
Didn't even look for the ump to call it out. Just already ready to throw it to first. And that's why I love baseball is that it's not about, I was actually speaking to my aunt about this the other night, where baseball's not about, like, you don't have to be in the best athletic shape. You don't have to.
You need cat-like reflexes.
You do.
But you can have a Bob Stanley waist.
You can have such one, even if it's just one, like you said, offensively, he was nothing to write home about, but defensively, you can have one really, really, really rare and fine-tuned skill and just go for it. You can just go all the way. Like, it Well, I was explaining El Guapo to my aunt, and how, you remember El Guapo?
Yes.
I don't actually know his real name.
I don't off the top of my head. I should.
For those of you who do not know who I'm talking about, he was the relief pitcher in, I'd say, the mid-90s in the Nomar generation. Sorry, the Noma generation. But I was talking to my aunt about how it's crazy because when I was a kid, I thought Guapo meant fat. Because he had this huge gut hanging out. And no disrespect, I'm not one to throw shade at having a tummy, but it didn't matter. And it's the same with Babe Ruth. It's the same with so many fantastic baseball players where it didn't matter that they were kind of out of shape or that they weren't these remarkable specimens like my boy Gronkowski.
Rich Garces. Who I always remember as El Guapo.
Yeah. El Guapo means the handsome one, for those of you who don't speak Spanish.
It's like, you know what's going to happen is like 15 years from now, people are going to be like, Big Papi. What was that guy's name?
Yeah. What was Big Papi's name? Whoa, like, that makes me sad.
It was like David Ortiz. But he's always going to be known as Big Papi. You know? Big Papi. It's like, no, that's David Ortiz.
Papi.
And if you'd asked me this question 10 years ago, I would have been like, oh, Rich Garces. Yeah.
I would have known it too. But no, that's one of the beauties of baseball, though, is that you can just have one specific thing you're good at. You don't have to be some across the board athlete.
I used to love watching Kirby Puckett hit into the infield.
Name I haven't heard in a while.
I used to love, especially later in his career, I used to love watching Kirby Puckett hit into the infield and then chug his way down to first base. You know, because Kirby Puckett, when he got one of them slugger hits in there, could knock the ball out of the park consistently, and he was a good enough defensive player. Mm. But that guy couldn't run.
Oh, yeah.
Kirby Puckett could not run.
It looked like a bullet leaving a gun.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. It was just, you know, Kirby's doing his best to get out there. But the thing about Bobby Doerr, I mean, RBI-wise, his numbers were good, but the rest of it overall, there were people hitting at a much higher rate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Ted Williams is one of his best friends, and he had, what, a 401?
Yeah, 401 average. So that's what people were hitting back then. But the thing about Bobby Doerr, and if you go down to Fenway, they've got that new train station in back of the parking lot across from the park. Mm-hmm. And next to the train station, they have all of the numbers that they've retired. They're big illuminated sculptures.
Oh, yes.
And on the side of each one, you can read about the player. And Bobby Doerr is number one, is the first one that you're going to see coming down there. Actually, he's number two because Jackie Robinson is the first one out there. Bobby Doerr was one of those guys that in an era where baseball started to become a truly professional sport, defined what it meant to be a professional athlete. Because what Bobby Doerr could do on the field wasn't just above and beyond what was happening in the sandlot across town. It was above and beyond what everybody else in the league could do. And those are the people that advance the sport. And those are the people that make the sport more competitive, more demanding, more exciting to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, sad to see one of the all-time...
R.I.P. Bobby Doerr.
All-time greats gone.
Well, in entertainment news, some of the nation's top AIDS activists are calling for designer Kenneth Cole to be ousted as leader of world-famous AIDS research charity, AMFAR. I don't know.
Yes.
Yes, AMFAR. As I say, sorry, the capital letters threw me off. Because of a controversial deal he made with Harvey Weinstein. More than 60 people, including Olympic diver Greg Louganis, playwright Larry Kramer, and former AMFAR board member Peter Staley, signed an open letter that was obtained by NBC News on Monday. They are asking for Cole to resign or be replaced as AMFAR board chairman, and for New York's top prosecutor to step in if it doesn't happen. The letter takes aim at an arrangement by Cole and Weinstein to split the proceeds of some charity auction items between AMFAR and a theater where a show produced by Weinstein had been staged. The agreement, which was made before the sexual misconduct scandal engulfed Weinstein, is being investigated by federal authorities and caused a bitter rift on AMFAR's board. Cole, in a statement to NBC News, said the activist's letter is, quote, based on a false narrative and distortion of facts.
So as I understand it, this has something to do with $600,000 that was diverted from a Harvey Weinstein produced staging of Finding Neverland mm-hmm. at the American Repertory Theater here in Boston.
Yes.
Into AMFAR's general fund. Ahead of that, there was some deal with this charity auction where Weinstein took some of the money and rooted it into this production and then moved the $600,000 back. Everybody says it's the lawyers all told, it's Michael Kors, isn't it?
Yeah. Kenneth Cole.
Or Kenneth Cole, rather. The lawyers all told Kenneth Cole, yeah, you can do that. It's not illegal. Looks a heck of a lot like money laundering, if you ask me. But as part of that deal, everyone on the board was asked to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And
that's skeevy.
In exchange for everyone signing the non-disclosure agreement, Harvey Weinstein was going to give another $1 million.
Even skeevier.
I don't know what is going on. I all of this is just bizarre.
They're trying to defend it by saying that Harvey Weinstein actually contributed a lot of the things that were being auctioned off. And in the brochure at the auction, it was stipulated that some of the funds were going to be going to the American Repertory Theater. That being said, still.
So is it a charity auction or are you raising?
Feels a little.
Is it charity auction or are you raising money to support Finding Neverland
in Boston?
Why is $600,000 moving between Los Angeles and Boston and then back to Los Angeles?
Well, supposedly, I looked into it a bit more, and supposedly the American Repertory Theater said that they would refund all of the investments made by Harvey Weinstein and the other people that were investing in the production if they could get a third-party donor, as it were, to cover what they had donated. Evidently Kenneth Cole's lawyers told him it was legal, it smells of money laundering. And
doesn't Harvey Weinstein just have millions of dollars sitting around that can throw at these things?
That's what I mean.
Or is he paid out all that money to women that he sexually assaulted?
I would say that's the thing that gets me the most about this is the sheer fact that he and whatever other investors had put up the money. And then when the American Repertory Theater said that, he basically hit up his buddy Kenneth and was like, hey, I have a way to get that money I invested back. You want to help out? And even if it wasn't technically illegal, it's a testament to this pattern of gross things that Harvey Weinstein does.
I could see doing it if you were paying off an investor who wanted to get out of a project and you needed short-term money and you were going to recoup that money and then pay it out later on. The situation where an investor says, hey, I got to get out of this. I need that $500,000 back now because I got to go do something over here. You know, like my kid needs chemo or whatever it is. So Harvey Weinstein's sitting there. He's like, I can't get $500,000 now. Let's auction some stuff.
Yeah.
I'll buy you out. And then downstream, I'll give that money back to AMFAR. That I could see as being legitimate. We don't have that level of detail here.
Yeah.
So the whole thing, especially because Weinstein is involved in it, stinks to high heaven. And I hate to see Kenneth Cole get caught up in this because I like his stuff.
I would say his shoes are quite fashionable and comfortable.
He's one of the better men's designers who are out there. No Perry Ellis, but you know, he's good. So yeah, I don't know that Kenneth Cole is necessarily doing anything deliberately wrong here. I think he's trying to, and he's been on the board of AMFAR since 2005.
Well, that's the thing is that
it's not like the guy just showed up and bad things started happening.
I would say he's been chairman of the board since 2005. He's been on the board for 30 years.
Yeah.
And that's what he said in his statement is, I don't believe I've done anything wrong. I have absolutely no intention of stepping down. And I agree with you in that I think that he thought he was doing something that would be not good PR, that would create a good business relationship that, you know, Harvey Weinstein, before all of this came out, the only thing people viewed him as is one of the most powerful men in Hollywood.
Right.
And having a good relationship with the most powerful man in Hollywood when you run an AIDS organization, not a bad look. And like, given, not a bad idea.
And given Harvey's activities, taking an interest in AIDS research is probably self-preservation.
Yeah. And that's why I agree that while I have very mixed feelings about the legality of this, or at least like the ick factor of this, I don't think Kenneth Cole was intentionally doing something wrong.
No. And take the bad man's money and use it to cure AIDS. I'm 100% in favor of that. Take the bad man's money and do good things with it. That doesn't redeem him, but it does at least get some silver lining around the cloud. Technology news. Before you buy that hoverboard, head over to the Consumer Product Safety Commission's website at cpsc.gov. That is cpsc.gov. A fresh wave of hoverboard recalls has been issued because lithium-ion batteries in the boards can catch fire or explode.
Why is anyone still buying those?
Affected brands include iHover Speed, Sonic Smart Wheels, Tech Drift, iLive, Go Wheels, Drone Nerds, Lazy Board, and Smart Balance Wheel. The first wave of recalls occurred in 2015 after injuries and fires were blamed on exploding batteries. In May of this year, two girls were killed in a house fire caused by a defective battery in a hoverboard.
Why? I blame Back to the Future for this, by the way. But why? Like, I don't get how it's even possible that somebody would release a product before testing and 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 testing it. Like, there, especially something like that where it's like, it's already somewhat dangerous. Have you been on a hoverboard?
No, because I don't like the orthopedist.
There, that's the thing, is like, I've tried to be on one and I was in someone's kitchen on one and I was legitimately holding like the counter and the island being like, first of all, how is this enjoyable? Second of all, how does anyone stay up on this thing? It's already a dangerous product just given the activity you're doing. How do you not quadruple check that it isn't going to, I don't know, spontaneously combust?
The thing about it is, it's not the hoverboard itself that's the problem. The hoverboards themselves are fine. It's the batteries. And
so test the batteries.
This is what happens is they get the batteries. The batteries are inevitably made in China. There's your first sign that we have a problem. The batteries are inevitably made in China. And the first wave comes through and the batteries are fine and everything works okay. And then China, being China, finds a way to make the batteries cheaper. Only the batteries now come with an exploding hazard, but because it's the same battery manufacturer putting the same battery, which has previously been tested, even though this is a different batch, same company, same battery, different batch, but because there's something a little different in the way that they were made, or simply because of incredibly poor quality control, a hallmark
of... That's what I was going to say. Don't any of these companies have quality control?
Poor quality control is a hallmark of Chinese manufacturing. Make no mistake. Aye, aye. The next batch of these things that comes through comes with a little extra explosion hazard and a higher risk of fire. So this stuff has all been through.
Here's your toy. It might explode.
Yeah. This stuff has all been through the Consumer Product Safety Commission ringer. It was all tested when they first decided to put it on sale in the United States. It passed. It was signed off on. And then the next manufacturing shipment comes in. Battery's a little bit different. Oh, now the batteries are blowing up again.
Like I said, it's just the most absurd thing for a toy.
Yeah.
It is a toy. It is a skateboard with a battery. That's essentially, I guess a scooter is a skateboard with a battery, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. It's the same thing we had with the Samsung phones a couple years ago where the batteries were blowing up. Lithium-ion batteries, unless they are made correctly, and sometimes even if they are made correctly, when they fail, they explode. Maybe we ought to be looking at a different technology to power our consumer products. Just a thought. Crazy idea here. Maybe you ought to stop putting lithium-ion batteries in everything.
Well, and even, I remember when hoverboards first came out, what was that, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, it was 2015, I think, was the first Christmas they were really big.
And they were banned from being on U.S. Postal Service planes because they might explode.
Yeah.
That isn't a red flag to maybe not buy a product, or for the product manufacturers to take every single precaution to prevent that from happening again. The fact that there's another story about hoverboards randomly exploding 2 years after they come out, not a good look.
Yeah. Here's what you do. First, you go to the CPSC.gov to see if the hoverboard has been recalled. if you have one of these things, or if you have a concern, take the battery out of the hoverboard. Even if you got to take,
throw it in the quarry.
Even if you got to take it apart to do it, and take it outside and keep it outside. You can't keep the whole hoverboard outside because it'll get stolen, but you can keep the battery outside. If you have the ability to keep the whole hoverboard outside, do that, because people aren't dying because the hoverboard blows up while they're riding down the street.
It's because when it's sitting there.
People are dying because in the middle of the night, these things are catching fire and burning houses down.
God.
And it is not worth losing your house and the lives of your loved ones for the sake of keeping a hoverboard around.
For the sake of a toy.
Yeah.
Ay, ay,
and if you live in an apartment building, you shouldn't have a hoverboard in there, because it's not just your family that's in danger. It's everybody's.
If you're over the age of 10, you shouldn't have a hoverboard.
No, I can see why people like them. I think they're neat. I could see a situation where if I was less concerned about going to the orthopedist, I might get one and learn how to ride it.
Until they actually stay true to Back to the Future and hover above the ground, I'm not sold.
Yeah, not coming anytime soon.
Eh. No, a gal can dream.
There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
Your Boston 5-day forecast, cold with a chance of rain. How's that sound?
Kind of looking forward to it, won't I?
Yeah.
Mama loves her some precipitation.
Maybe we'll give you an early look at Thanksgiving. I think we could do that. I think we can get away with that. Tonight, it's going to be clear. It's going to be cold. Temperatures go down into the upper 30s. Tomorrow, we're going to have some clouds blowing around here. They like to do that. And a chance of showers and rain. Temperatures in the upper 40s during the day, mid-30s tomorrow night. Friday, no rain, mostly sunny, but a lot of wind. Lots of wind, gusty winds. Highs in the mid-40s, lows around freezing on Friday night. Saturday, we start out dry, the clouds roll in, highs get up to about 51 degrees. And then rain starts late in the day, lows around 50. Sunday, pretty much the same thing. Showers in the morning, high in the mid-50s. Then the showers move on and the cold returns, low below freezing on Sunday night, getting down around 30 degrees. And then on Monday, partly cloudy, windy, typical late autumn day. Highs in the lower 40s, lows right around freezing. Looking a little further out the next week, you'll be happy to know your Thanksgiving travel will be unencumbered by rain, at least in the immediate area. Tuesday, we're looking at partly cloudy skies, highs in the mid-50s, lows above freezing on Tuesday night. Wednesday, colder, but still some sunshine about. Highs in the mid-40s, lows around 30. Thanksgiving Day, bundle up if you're going to the football game. Highs, as a new cold front moves in the upper 30s.
Whew. I'm going to be in Maine, too.
And it's not going to get much colder than that. It's basically going to be a couple degrees either side of freezing on Thanksgiving Day. So bundle up for the game, but we're not seeing any heavy rain in the forecast. No snow, none of that.
No, I want some snow.
At least in the Boston area.
If it's going to be cold, give me a little snow. Give me something pretty to look at.
There's been some flakes blowing around in certain parts of the state. We just haven't seen it here yet.
Not the right ones.
Yeah, well, you know.
I'll be at Phoebe Angle's farm for Thanksgiving this year.
Oh, so you're going up to Maine.
Cape Elizabeth.
Nice.
Get it.
Nice. You could have come over to my place. I got Sarah is coming over.
Well, I really want to kill a chicken.
Oh. Are you killing dinner?
I hope so. Phoebe, are we killing dinner? Text me.
Wow. That's
I switch off each year which parent I spend Thanksgiving with. And it's my mom's here. And I said to her, I was like, so what do you want to do? My sibling's going to be away. Like, where are we going? She's like, do you think it'd be weird to go to Phoebe's mom's farm? And I said it's Phoebe. She's like, why did you even ask?
Yeah.
Of course.
That's cool.
So it's going to be six women hanging on a farm.
Nice.
It's going to be dope.
I got the fresh turkey coming in. I'm cooking again this year. The gravy story will be prepared for 2 weeks
for
from tonight.
2 weeks.
Yes, we will hear my ongoing misadventures with gravy.
Well, I will say that there are some turkeys that grow in my neighborhood, so maybe that could be what I bring. I could just kill it and toss it in the trunk.
You can hunt them with a golf club.
Did I say turkeys that grow in my neighborhood?
Yeah.
Live.
You can hunt them with a golf club.
What was her name? Martha Moxley style.
Yeah. Ooh.
Ooh.
Too soon.
Yeah.
Too soon.
I think it'll be too soon for the next 50 years.
855-915-9636 is the telephone number. It is WMFO Medford. This is The Big Picture with Derek Gary and Shea Spillane. Coming up at 9 o'clock tonight on The Town with Mikey D, everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. So rip the knob off your radio. Run outside. Tell the neighbors it's WMFO. When we come back, did you hear all the other stories that caught our attention this week?
How can you tell a blade chuck roast from an arm chuck roast? The blade chuck roast has a long, thin cross-section of the shoulder blade bone, and the arm chuck has a small, round arm bone. Both make excellent pot roast. The arm chuck has less waste, fat, and bone, but the blade chuck is usually more tender and can be oven roasted if it's USDA Prime or Choice. For more free information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
What a rough week at work. I can't believe we got to travel 100 miles to your parents for Thanksgiving. I'm bushed.
We've got to be there no later than 4 o'clock. Dinner's at 5:30, and the whole family's going to be there. Are you okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm all right. We'll stop for coffee if I get too sleepy.
Don't turn the Thanksgiving holiday into a tragedy. Being drowsy behind the wheel can lead to inattentive driving, or you could fall asleep and cause a crash, resulting in loss of life or serious injury for you, your family, or someone else who is simply sharing the road. If you're too sleepy, it may be too late.
What are you doing? You almost got us killed! Pull over! I'll drive.
Thanksgiving should be a happy time. Don't mess it up by driving drowsy. Be well rested and stay alert. Don't be among the New Jersey residents who die each year by falling asleep at the wheel. This message from the New Jersey Division of Highway Traffic Safety, the New Jersey Broadcasters Association, and this station.
WMFO Medford. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shea Spillane. With me, as always, my fantastic co-host, Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. And now on to one of our favorite parts of the program called Did You Hear? Where we quiz each other on the various interesting news stories of the last week. And I'm going to kick us off here with Barbie.
Barbie has the first ever hijab-wearing Barbie is going to be released.
Mm-hmm.
And she is modeled after a Muslim athlete. Is she a fencer?
She's a fencer.
She's a fencer, yes. Mm-hmm. I forget her name.
It's Ibtihaj Muhammad. And she was actually the first American athlete to compete in the Olympics wearing her headscarf. And that's what the Barbie's actually modeled after. Is if you look at it, she was Glamour magazine presented the doll for the first time at Monday's Woman of the Year Summit in New York. And if you look at the doll, you can look her up online. She's dressed in fencing gear with the hijab on, which I think is very cool.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, it's, and it's important. It's part of.
Does she come with a little fencing foil? I just saw the doll.
She comes with a sword and with the helmet. And it's part of Mattel's Shero program. Last year, they also...
That's, by the way, S-H-E-R-O. That's not Japanese Shero, which is something else entirely.
It's She-Hero, if you will. But they've been purposely trying to release dolls that will inspire little girls with women who break boundaries, who, you know, people like the first person to wear a headscarf at the Olympics.
Cool. Like it. Like it. Rose McGowan.
There is multiple things I could say.
Give me any one.
Harvey Weinstein, Louis C.K.
Yeah, well, no. Give me one that happened this week.
Rose McGowan yelled about Louis C.K.'s apology. I know that.
Yeah, but I'm thinking more important than that.
Lay it on me.
Turned herself into the Virginia police.
Oh, no, that one I did not hear.
Yes, Rose McGowan turned herself
this
in.
This is called Did You Hear? And no, I did not.
Turned herself into the Virginia police on narcotics charges and was bailed out.
Oh, Rosie, Rosie,
for $5,000 a few hours later. You may recall a couple of weeks ago, October 31st, Virginia police announced that they were looking for her because she had left her stuff on a plane to Washington for the Women's March.
Oh, yes.
And they found traces of cocaine.
Oopsies.
Rose McGowan immediately responded by saying, they're trying to silence me. Then decided to show up and at least tell the police, yes, I'm here. Now she claims that the narcotics were planted. Because the Virginia police...
I'm sorry, listeners. I did not mean to just fart laugh into the microphone, yeah. But oh,
the narcotics were planted, so says Rose McGowan.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's trying to set up Rose McGowan because she's so worthy of making an elaborate plot to take her down.
It's what we do to all outspoken women, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Lethal injection.
Love it.
That's not really what I was aiming for. Though I appreciate your opinion.
Lethal injection. I have not heard anything. Is this in regards to an actual execution or the methods used?
It's in regards to an actual execution.
Oh, God. I heard a snippet about something with that, but I don't know what it was.
Ohio scrapped the execution of Alva Campbell today after failing to find a viable vein for the lethal injection, though it does plan to try again in 2 years. Prison officials have been warned about his extensive health problems, but said they were confident they could carry out the execution, providing a wedge-shaped pillow to help him breathe during the procedure. But the team tried for about 30 minutes to find an injection site before the execution was called off, according to media.
Oh, dear.
Campbell's attorney said his client was overwhelmed by the experience, saying, quote, "It was a day he'd never forget." The governor who rejected clemency for Campbell set a new execution date of June 5th, 2019, but Stebbins questioned whether the state would have more success then. Campbell is on death row for shooting 18-year-old Charles Dials in cold blood during a carjacking following his 1997 escape from custody on armed robbery charges. Campbell, who had already served 20 years for an earlier murder, pretended he was paralyzed to stage the getaway. But now his lawyers say there is nothing fake about his illnesses.
Do we know what illnesses he has? Is he going to last 2 years?
Well, that's the thing that I think is so interesting about it, is that from how it sounds, I can't imagine he will last 2 years. You can't find a viable vein even using a... not a tourniquet. Is that what you call the thing heroin addicts use? Tourniquet?
Oh, yeah.
I hate that I know that there's a thing heroin addicts use. But the fact that you can't find, like, it's... people can flex and you can see a proper vein.
Yeah.
It's...
I'm guessing this guy's in pretty bad shape if you can't get a vein.
And that's... he's in his late 60s. I think that the choice to wait 2 years was very purposeful.
Well, this...
and that if it was 6 months, it'd be like, okay, we could try again. But 2 years is basically being like, let's see if he makes it to that.
This raises a pretty thorny question about whether or not it is ethical or moral for the state to basically nurse this prisoner back to health so that they can execute him by lethal injection. And that's a conversation that I don't think much of anybody wants to have. But it's a conversation that we probably should have.
Yeah, it's a question of, I mean, we're not supposed to hold any human life above another. But if it's a human life that has already been time and time again ruled to be validly ended.
Yeah.
is it really worth the resources to keep this man alive so maybe his veins will be... And even the judge himself who refused to grant him clemency said, like, it probably won't be any easier